Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Takeout ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
But who's counting, right?
His name is Major.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen.
Please welcome Major Garrett
from the nation's capital.
Major, fantastic.
It's The Takeout.
This is a major achievement.
With CBS News Chief Washington Correspondent.
Major Garrett.
Yes, CBS. Yes, hi.
Major Garrett.
Major, that's nonsense, and you should know better.
Is Major out of the doghouse?
The answer is yes.
Welcome to the very best part of my broadcast week. I'm Major Garrett. This is The Takeout. For those of you who are new to the show, politics, policy, a little bit of pop culture. What are our ethos? Well, we're relentlessly curious, and we're steadfastly nonpartisan. This is our eighth year of the show, and we get new folks who come along, and I want to explain what we're about every step of the way. We are coming to you from the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee office, and our guest is Bob Casey, Senator from Pennsylvania. Senator, good to see you.
Major, good to be with you. Thank you.
I want to explain something to the audience. Historically on the show, I have avoided having senators on during a re-election year. Senator Casey's running for re-election. But he's right in the middle of a lot of really important issues right now, and I wanted to have him on the show. David McCormick is the presumptive Republican nominee. If he wants to avail himself of this show during this calendar year, he's open to do so. And if the Senator and David McCormick want to bring us to Pennsylvania and use this show as a forum for a debate, I'm certainly open to that as well. Just want to make that clear. Senator Casey, I want to ask you about something. We're recording this on January 9th. As you well know, the Pentagon had a press conference this afternoon. It announced that the Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin suffers from prostate cancer. That is one disclosure. But as you also know, and the country has been focused heavily on, he went in for a surgical procedure December 22nd. Then there were complications, hospitalized on January 1st, transferred his authorities to his deputy on January 2nd. Only on January 4th is the president and the national security advisor notified, and only on January 5th is the public notified. Are you satisfied with that course of events?
Well, first of all, I want to wish him well.
I know you do,
yes. He's got a difficult health challenge. I actually had it a year ago.
And I will talk to you about that in a second,
in February.
Yes.
So that's number one. Number two is I think that there's no question there wasn't the kind of transparency that anyone should expect, that everyone has a right to expect, both taxpayers and
the president, the national security advisor.
But I think that leads to the third point, which might be the most significant at all, and that's the chain of command.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in that position, you're in a chain of command and also in succession to the presidency, there has to be a lot more transparency. That's paramount. Look, he took responsibility for this. Apparently there's some some internal review that will be conducted.
Right, but you know how that is. That's a Washington thing to give us give who's ever in the griddle 30 days in case so they can push it off, and so we're all focused on something else 30 days from now. But right now, I have friends asking me, and they don't ask me about every political story. They don't ask me about most political stories in Washington, but they're asking me, how could this be?
Yeah, does it look? No one should. Should say that this is acceptable. There's no way it's acceptable. The question is what they do going forward and what kind of protocols they put in place to make sure this never happens again. I don't know all the details. I didn't see the coverage today of all the press statement and the back and forth. But I think
you're not satisfied.
No, I'm not satisfied with what transpired. I can't make an assessment of the explanation today because I haven't seen it.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned a moment ago, and I want to ask you about this because you have personal experience. You notified the public in February of last year of a diagnosis of prostate cancer. First of all, how are you doing?
Doing well. Yeah, I had a successful operation on Valentine's Day 2023. I missed 13 days of work and was voting on, I think, the 13th day.
So. Okay. And based on that experience, does that inform you in any way about what may or may not have happened with the defense secretary?
I think everyone's situation is different, and I don't know enough about the medical.
Were you advised of any possible repercussions of the procedure you had, your surgery?
Well, repercussions in the sense that you some people might take longer, you might to have a longer recovery period. I did, and I was fortunate. And sometimes that's just a lot of factors, including just luck.
Mm-hmm.
But the key thing going forward is you have to keep checking to make sure that you don't have any kind of spread or any kind of other implications.
And let's underscore that for the audience. How do you check? What's the process by which?
A PSA test, yeah.
A very important thing.
Critically important. And for me, it was a learning moment or a teaching moment, depending on how you describe it. But I think for a lot of men, it's just something that you've got to keep, be aware of and get those tests.
And detect early.
Right.
Which you did in your case.
I gathered that from what you've released publicly. I was really fortunate that had surgery in a relatively short period of time. I could have waited. You do have some time to wait. But I had surgery and a good surgical outcome, and ever since then, good reports. But doesn't foreclose the possibility of something surfacing later.
There have been those, and I know this is a politicized topic, who have said that the defense secretary was derelict in his duty and therefore should resign. Do you share those sentiments?
I don't think he should resign, but I think he's got his team has to bear some of the accountability here. They've got to do a much better job of informing the public when something like this happens and informing the White House and others in the administration so the chain of command is not in any way compromised.
Mm-hmm. And in this particular set of circumstances with the war in Ukraine, hostilities in the Middle East, U.S. military personnel dealing with attacks in Iraq, Syria, Red Sea, having a defense secretary on point matters a lot.
I think it heightens the urgency of having a protocol in place to provide that transparency.
All right. One of the issues I want to talk to you about is the future of aid to Ukraine. I know you care about it deeply. What's the status?
Well, we've got a supplemental bill that's ready to go, but for except the negotiations on border policy. I think it's noteworthy to point out that this isn't simply a Ukraine bill that will provide something in the order of $61 billion for Ukraine, which is vitally important for not just the near term, but longer term. If it's highly likely if this aid isn't provided that Vladimir Putin will prevail. And you don't have to just take my word for it to somebody in Washington. Just ask President Zelensky. Mm-hmm. He basically said that to us in two separate meetings we had with him in the Senate, one in December and one in September. So it's vital for Ukraine, but it's also, I think, vital for the free world. If we're going to allow an invader like Putin, a murderous dictator, to go into another country, invade that country, take it over, well, he's not going to stop at Ukraine, but it also sends the absolute wrong message to dictators around the world, including President Xi. So the stakes for democracy worldwide, the stakes for how we deal with these dictators.
And European security.
Absolutely. It's all on the line. And I think for Americans, is do you want to make an investment in a fighting force that has been highly successful and determined, or do you want to fight a larger war that will involve a lot more money and a lot more American forces? I don't think anyone wants to fight a war in Europe. And that's what you're looking at if you abandon Ukraine.
Where are the immigration talks, as you understand it?
Seems like they've made a lot of good progress. It's taken weeks, but they're not there yet. I don't have a sense today that they have any text yet, and that's obviously essential. But my sense is that there's been a lot of good work done in these talks. And I think it's important to point out, in this bill, obviously you'll have the Ukraine aid. There'll be a lot of support for Israel to destroy Hamas, a lot of humanitarian support for both Ukraine and Israel and other places around the world. I think what was missed on the first round is because there's so much focus on the border policy, where will the line be drawn on asylum policy? What will be the mechanics of that, for example? The funding for the border, the extra funding, I should say, something in the order of $14 billion, is a lot of money for hiring 1,300 Border Patrol agents, a lot of DEA agents, a lot of other border personnel to strengthen border security, because we've got a terrible crisis there. And then, in addition to that, new screening technology to stop fentanyl, to detect and then stop fentanyl, which has, I think, been kind of lost in the debate. But it's going to be critically important to a state like mine, where we have a terrible fentanyl problem in some of our counties, a lot of them very small rural counties.
We're going to go to a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk to Senator Bob Casey about what the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, said about the border policy debate. When we come back, I'm Major Garrett, segment two of The Takeout, in just 1 second.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Welcome back to The Takeout. Senator Bob Casey, Democrat of Pennsylvania, is our guest. Continuing our conversation on Face the Nation earlier this week, Speaker of the House Mike Johnson said, it's very simple. These are his words, not mine. I can't explain, and my Republican members have a very hard time explaining to their constituents why there needs to be more money for Ukraine when there's not enough policy to stop what he described as an invasion on the southern border. What is your answer to that?
Well, first of all, they're two radically different issues. The fight in Ukraine is about stopping a murderous dictator from taking over a country. So we should debate that. If someone doesn't want to support that funding, that's fine. But I think you have to separate that from what's happening at the border. There is no question that we have to engage and come to conclusion on these border policy negotiations. But also we have to vote for the money, the funding, to hire more people at the border. You can't have border security without investment.
Right, but Speaker Johnson said specifically to that point,
right,
I'm not putting more money into a bad policy. Those are his words.
Right.
So money is not an inducement for the Speaker, or it sounds, many of his Republican
colleagues.
Well,
apparently not, because the Republicans in the Congress, both House and Senate, mostly House, by the way, in 2022 voted to defund the border. I don't know if not many people know that, because they defund the border protection, border security, because in 2022 we had an appropriations vote at the end of the year, December, in the Senate, I think it was December 22nd. Republicans voted against that. 87% of them in the Congress voted against it. So thereby voted to nullify or to zero out all the money for ICE, Immigration Customs Enforcement, all the money for Border Patrol, zero. So they had a chance to vote for you know, north of $25 billion in border security, they voted to defund it. In 23, when our side put money on the table for more technology to stop fentanyl, more Border Patrol hirings, more DEA agents, they blocked it. The Republicans blocked it. The question is, contrary to 22 and 23, will in 24 Republicans in the Congress get serious about border security and vote for the funding? And I'm anxious to see what they'll do.
In a political year, do you think that's possible? Or do you think they want the issue?
I think it's possible. I think a lot of them just want the issue, yeah. And because, look, like a lot of difficult challenges, you can talk in sound bites, you can point fingers, but if you want to solve the problem, you got to roll up your sleeves like these negotiators are doing. I give a lot of credit to Republican Senate negotiators. Senator Lankford is leading that. Senator Murphy, Senator Sinema on our side, they have worked for weeks and weeks and weeks now. Mm-hmm. And so they're engaging in the hard work of figuring out that policy. But the hard work also involves voting for the dollars to be able to secure the border. And it's border security for a lot of politicians is hot air and tough talk. You got to vote for the money. If you're serious about, it's like law enforcement. If you're serious about law enforcement, you got to fund it. Mm-hmm. And I hope that they will fund the.
Was it a tactical mistake for the White House to link these Ukraine, Israel, and the border?
I don't think so. I think they're all vitally important. And around here, it is very difficult to pass. People would say, okay, why don't you just fund Ukraine and then have a vote on Israel funding and all that? That was, unfortunately, I hate to say this, but for days long ago, you can't do, when you have a moment where you can get a lot done, in this case, we can get a lot done for Ukraine, for Israel to stop Hamas, for humanitarian support, and for border policy and border funding. I think it's a moment where you had to do it in one bill.
Speaking of Israel, Senator Casey, describe your level of discomfort about the civilian casualties in Gaza.
I think it's like any human being. It's very high. There's no question that horrific loss of life is troubling to everyone.
On this program, about a month ago, a colleague of yours, the chairman of the Armed Services Committee, Jack Reed, said it was an open question whether Israel had committed war crimes. Do you agree?
Well, those questions are going to be asked, and there'll be inquiries about that. But I think right now we have to concentrate, as I have tried to do, on getting Israel the help it needs, the continual help in addition to what we've already done, to do everything possible to destroy Hamas. Because I think what the narrative on all of this the last couple of months has been, well, there was this horrific event on October the 7th, the worst day for the state of Israel since the Holocaust. More than 1,200 people killed. I saw the video, and many of us did in the Senate, and some little by little more Americans are seeing it. But the compilation of videos that were put together, about an hour's worth, and we only saw about 10% of what they could have shown us. But
savage stuff.
Oh my God! The savagery, the brutality, the depravity is probably the best word, because it wasn't simply these Hamas terrorists going into a kibbutz and indiscriminately shooting every person they saw, but it was after they killed someone over and over again, they would keep screaming epithets and use the word dog over and over and over again, against people who are lying on a floor dead and bleeding. That kind of depravity is, this is my view, it's different than some of the terrorism we've seen over the last generation. There's no question that when a terrorist or a terrorist organization attacks a people or sets off an explosion that kills a lot of people and injures a lot of people, like ISIS did in Iran recently, there's no question they take that action to, in fact, because that's the word, they try to terrorize a people. This kind of terrorism that Hamas is engaged in, I think in some ways is different and in some ways maybe more threatening, because they're trying to wipe out a people, the Jewish people. They're not simply trying to terrorize the state of Israel or terrorize a kibbutz or terrorize a neighborhood or have one strike. They've continued to attack, have rocket fire over and over again these last number of weeks. Months now, they've also directly engaged in using rape as a weapon of terror. Thirdly, they've said over and over and over again, they want to have more October 7th. So this idea that the threat manifested itself on October the 7th and then receded, and then everything since then has been an Israeli response, is really faulty, I think. This is an ongoing, clear, and present danger to the people of Israel. And unless you remove that threat as best you can, disable it, or badly undermine it, that threat's going to remain on their border. So I think that has to be our continual focus in helping Israel do that.
Has Israel, to your satisfaction, Senator Casey, done everything it can to avoid unnecessary civilian casualties?
I've seen no evidence on the record that Israel has not taken a series of steps to avoid civilian casualties. Sending out warnings, whether it's texts or leaflets, giving warnings ahead of time, even giving Hamas a heads up in a sense by warning civilians. Number two, embedded within IDF units are lawyers and others who are making determinations in real time about whether this particular strike, what will happen if this particular mm-hmm. strike goes forward. Now, we had some colleagues report on this who were traveling in Israel recently and got a more extensive briefing on this. So I think, look, they're trying to do everything they can, but the problem here is it's not the usual war setting, and everyone wants to simplify it, but this ain't simple, where you have a fighting force over here and the civilian population over there, which is true in a lot of conflicts, or there is often a degree of separation, which there isn't here. You have a terrorist organization that had committed one of the worst acts of terror in human history on one day, who continually embed themselves with their own people, use their own people as shields. Now, from some of the reporting, that they're using the hostages as shields. So you have a terribly complex circumstance where the Israelis can't just say, "Oh well, it's a difficult circumstance, so we'll just wait for them to come out of hiding." They have to continue to prosecute, I think, this effort to destroy Hamas, and it is much more difficult than I think anything we've faced in similar circumstances in terms of urban conflict.
That is the voice of Senator Bob Casey, Democrat of Pennsylvania. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the difficulties the Israeli conflict with Hamas has created within the Democratic Party and some of the sense of outrage that particularly young Democrats feel about the course of this conflict thus far. I'm Major Garrett. Segment 3 of The Takeout. Just one moment.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back to The Takeout. Senator Bob Casey, Democrat, Pennsylvania, is our guest. As you know, Senator Casey, you may have gotten calls on this directly. You may have had people engage with you directly. The words genocide are thrown around. There's a sense of disproportionateness with the Israelis. The Palestinians are getting ground up in this war. What do you say to constituents of yours, Democrats, who are enraged by this?
Well, I guess part of what I would say
is, I don't think I'm mischaracterizing it.
No, look, it's created a lot of divisions in the country. There's no question about it in our country. But part of what I would say to this question is what I just said before about the complexity of taking out a terrorist organization, disabling it to as far an extent as possible to take it out of existence. And when you're doing that, it's terribly difficult to prosecute that and not have, when you're in the middle of a war, civilian casualties. I do think that it's important for us to have debate about this. It's important for us to debate what's happening going forward. But it's an exceedingly complex, difficult circumstance. And I think in some of the back and forth on social media and otherwise, it's unfortunately badly simplified.
Would it be helpful if the Netanyahu government in Israel were to make it clear that it supported a two-state solution, that it would be less aggressive with settlements, let's say, for example, in the West Bank, and members of his cabinet wouldn't say such inflammatory things about future intentions?
There's no question that some comments by his cabinet have made things worse. There's no question about that. Secondly, you cannot abide that kind of West Bank settlement. It's critically important for the Israeli government. When someone engages in violence, they have to be prosecuted. There has to be a consequence to that. And when the Israeli government has been more forward-leaning on that, you've seen some of the violence recede. So that's critically important. And then finally, I've been and will always be a supporter of the two-state solution. What other choice is there? And there's just no other way to move forward. Now, I don't think that there's any consensus yet about what would be the governing authority in Gaza.
No.
And that's yet to be determined. But
it has to be a post-Hamas Gaza, from your perspective.
Oh, it has to be. Yeah. And by the way, a lot of the Arab nations in the Middle East who publicly complain about what Israel's doing, publicly claim to support the Palestinian people, haven't done much over the last 50 years. In my judgment, they won't like me saying this, but they haven't done much over the last 50 years to help the people of Gaza, number one. And number two, you know, behind the scenes, behind closed doors, when they're talking to their Israeli counterparts or their American counterparts or their European counterparts, they're all saying, please take out Hamas. And I'm not quoting one individual, but I mean, that's the tenor of it. You take out Hamas, Israel, and yet we're still going to complain about you publicly. So I think the objective of
one of the difficulties of the region. You don't know what people are really meaning when they say things publicly and what their motives actually are.
But
it's always been difficult.
It's a secondary but important reason that Hamas can't be the governing party or have disproportionate power in Gaza, because if it's not only the primary reason, which is the threat to Israel, but secondarily, if Hamas remains in control, you're going to have this persist for years, where the Arab nations aren't going to help them very much.
One of the regional interlocutors with the United States is Egypt. Let me bring up a somewhat uncomfortable subject. One of your colleagues, Senator Menendez, has been accused in several indictments, some superseding indictments which have enlarged the charges, of acting collaboratively with the Egyptian government against U.S. federal law. Your colleague from Pennsylvania, Senator Fetterman, has said he should be expelled, should be out of the Senate. What is your opinion on Senator Menendez?
Well, I was very clear. I thought he should resign. I was deeply troubled by that indictment. In some ways, more deeply troubled by some parts of it that didn't get much publicity. I thought the allegations about, and they are allegations, but when you read the specificity of the allegations about talking to a prosecutor or having those kinds of conversations, it's just totally inappropriate. And the Senate, there may be at some point a resolution. I'd have to take a look at it when it's presented to the Senate. But
why shouldn't there be, or why hasn't there been one to date?
I don't know. I can't answer that in terms of the mechanics of it. But I will say this. New Jersey has a Senate election this year. They have a primary, I guess, in June, mm-hmm. and then a general election. And voters in that state are going to make a determination. But I was hoping that Senator Menendez would have resigned after the indictment, for a couple of reasons. One is because of the nature and the specificity of that indictment. But secondly, because I think it makes it very difficult to represent a state when you've got those kind of charges. He chose not to do that. That's his decision.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about things that are percolating at the federal court level regarding the former president of the United States, Donald Trump. There's been questions raised about whether or not he should be on primary or general election ballots in regards to the 14th Amendment, specifically Clause 3 of the 14th Amendment. Do you have an opinion on that?
I'm not a constitutional scholar.
Neither am I.
Although I do have a law degree. Practice law.
One up on me. I don't even have a law degree. Although after the last six years, I think I've qualified for one. I think about all the reading I've done.
So anyway. far be it for me to do a constitutional exegesis, but
other senators have weighed in on this.
Yeah, but the question, I think the broader question that most people have an opinion on is should a court take a presidential candidate off a ballot by virtue of its decision, whether it's an appeal to the Supreme Court ultimately or to any other court. And I think that the bar on that is very, very high. And I think I think for as much as you can make a strong, maybe the constitutional scholars can make a strong constitutional case.
That Trump should be removed.
Yeah. There's an argument there constitutionally. But I do think it's a difficult question for democracy when you have someone who's seeking a public office, especially the presidency, and they're going to be on virtually every other state ballot. Should a court start knocking them off individual state ballots?
If I hear you correctly, Senator Casey, what I think I hear you saying is this would create disturbances or unfamiliarity or upset within the country, and it shouldn't happen. Court shouldn't do this.
I'd be concerned about that. I think second, an ancillary reason is that it does give this candidate who thrives on grievance another reason to say it gives him a narrative that I think we shouldn't grant him.
Was January 6th, 2021, in your mind, Senator Casey, an insurrection?
I think it was, yeah.
Okay. Does that make the former president, by your light, an insurrectionist?
Look, I think he is, just based upon the record. I think he is, but it is another question whether or not legally, constitutionally.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a whole other inquiry then. But I think just generally, I think he fomented it and he participated, and then participated that day in calling for the storming of the Capitol, but then had plenty of chances hour after hour to call it off and didn't.
What are your memories of that day? Your starkest memory?
Yeah, sitting in the Senate and hearing some kind of disturbance outside initially, thinking that it was something minor, and then as the noise level went up, still thinking it was not a threat, but it sounded like some people had gotten into the Capitol and it was some kind of disturbance, but I thought it was very limited. Then when I saw in the back row, Senator Brown is next to me, and right next to him is the aisle. So 10 feet from me is the aisle. In that aisle was a law enforcement official with an automatic weapon. I can't remember whether it was Capitol Police, I think it probably was, with an automatic weapon. Then I thought, well, that's something I've never seen on the Senate floor. This must be worse than I thought.
Let me stop you right there because we need to go to break. That is the voice of Senator Bob Casey. Back for segment four. Just 1 second.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back to The Takeout, continuing our conversation with Senator Bob Casey, Democrat of Pennsylvania. Continue your thoughts on that day, January 6, 2021. You see a law enforcement member with a long gun right outside. Was it inside the chamber?
In the chamber. And then I'll try to shorten this, but you know, they secured the perimeter of the Senate chamber, and I thought, okay, well then this disturbance will be quelled and we'll go back to the business at hand. We waited for a little while. It seemed like a long time, but it wasn't, probably only minutes, where at one point some security official grabbed the microphone and said, "We have to get out right now." So then he had every person in that chamber, not just 100 or 96, whatever the number of senators were in the room at that point, but also staff who had come in and law enforcement, so much bigger group of people, getting through what I remember to be just one door, two, you know, swinging doors, just one way of leaving. At that moment, I felt something could happen to us at that moment. I don't know why, it just occurred to me that we're in some kind of danger now. I didn't know what it was. And then we were taken to a secure room and we were there for hours. But a lot of the detail of what was happening in the hallway, I didn't learn about really in detail until the impeachment videos and other evidence.
I'm glad you mentioned impeachment, because something happened today. Again, we're recording this January 9th. So today there was a hearing of the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals about presidential immunity.
Right.
Now, I remember, and I'm sure you do, Senator Casey, that during the impeachment trial in the Senate of former President Trump, his defense counsel said, "Hey, you don't need to vote for impeachment because there is a criminal process by which the President of the United States can be judged." Today, January 9th, different attorneys went before a three-judge panel and said, because the president wasn't convicted in the Senate trial, you can't consider any criminal charges against him. Can you square that circle for me?
I don't think I can.
What does it tell you?
Well, look, when you consider what this court is trying to determine, I think it does come down to a basic question of accountability. I mean, you're either going to have some degree of accountability for what happened that day or not. And a lot of folks out there are undergoing prosecution. And the question is, I think for a lot of people, is will there be a measure of accountability that is imposed upon the former president or not?
Do you want absolute presidential immunity for any president, Joe Biden, Donald Trump, or anyone else?
I don't think that makes sense because of the nature of our
system.
You're
certain it doesn't make sense, right?
It doesn't make sense because the nature of our system is one where every public official, to some degree, at some point is going to be held accountable, either during an election or because they've violated the law and there's a prosecution. So I just think it's a basic tenet of our system that there has to be accountability.
And I'm sure you recall the words of the Senate Republican leader, Mitch McConnell, who said the former president is practically and morally responsible.
I remember those words,
And can be held to account civilly or criminally.
Right, right. And here we are.
Can Joe Biden win Pennsylvania?
I think he can, and I think he will. But it'll be close, as it was last time, 1.2%.
To those who are gnashing their teeth and feeling very fretful, what do you say about the president's reelection campaign?
Well, I think it applies to my campaign as well, if you don't mind me talking about that. Often in a campaign dynamic, people don't have a detailed sense of what you've been working on and what you've done until you can advertise. And that's going to be true of the president. It could be true in my race as well. We live in a society now where it's much harder to land or transmit that information, even though people have access to more information about what happens in Washington. There's just a lot coming in front of people. They've lived through a terrible pandemic, a rough economy in the aftermath of the pandemic. Our society is divided badly, and I think people are often tuned out to politics. Now, I do think, as time goes by, people are paying closer attention, number one, to the debates and who did what and you know what your work is if you're running like I am. And then secondly, you get the benefit of advertising where you can make a point. And I think after that happens, when people have all the information in front of them, I think I'll win my race. I think the president will win Pennsylvania.
Earlier on Face the Nation, the Speaker of the House, again, Mike Johnson, said it was irresponsible and nonsense to call him an election denier because he signed on to an amicus brief filed by many House Republicans about a lawsuit filed by the state of Texas that specifically mentioned Pennsylvania as an unconstitutionally derelict state in the 2020 election. Since you represent Pennsylvania, I'd like you to address that lawsuit and what the Speaker said.
Well, I've heard this argument for years, both in the context of the legal filings, but just, I mean, it played out on January the 6th. Senator Hawley introduced the measure that challenged Pennsylvania's vote.
Sought to disenfranchise every single Pennsylvanian
exactly.
who cast a ballot, Trump or Biden.
Exactly. And it was insulting. It was erroneous. It was all based upon a lie. There was nothing in Pennsylvania that was inappropriate about that election. We had a record turnout, the highest presidential turnout in the history of our state, a dramatic increase in voting from 2016 to 2020. I think it was more than an 800,000 vote increase in the middle of a pandemic, because we had, thankfully, a mail-in ballot law in effect, and it worked.
That predated the pandemic, by
right.
the way.
It was passed in
People forget that. People gloss over
yeah,
that.
Yeah, passed in 2019. And it was being implemented in real time in a presidential race, and it worked pretty much flawlessly to get not just enough people to make sure they could have their right to vote with a ballot or in person or voting, you know, voting on election day. Some could vote early, but it was in the middle of a pandemic, and it worked. And they just didn't like the results, so they make up lies about how it transpired in our state.
By your lights, is Speaker Johnson, because he signed on to that amicus brief, an election denier?
Oh, I think that anyone who signs a brief like that is an election denier. We had members of our delegation.
Yes.
Every Republican member of Congress from Pennsylvania who was elected in 2020.
On that ballot.
On that same ballot.
Through those procedures.
Same procedures. who then tried to, you know, deny or disenfranchise all those voters, I think by definition they're election deniers. I mean, there's just no question about it.
We've got about 30 seconds to go. I want to ask you about Dean Phillips. He's running against the president, but he says the president and the DNC are anti-democratic because they're trying to remove him from various primary ballots. Address that.
I don't know the mechanics of that. But when you seek public office, there's ballot requirements that you got to comply with, and if he's complied with them, I'm sure he'll be in good shape. But I don't know the details of what he's alleging.
That is the voice of Senator Bob Casey, Democrat of Pennsylvania. Stay tuned for your Takeout Outtake Special. We'll see you next week, folks.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Welcome to your Takeout Outtake Especial. Senator Bob Casey, Democrat of Pennsylvania, is our special guest. All right, I'm going to ease up a little bit here, Senator. Three threshold questions we ask everyone on the show. So take them in whichever order you prefer.
Yeah.
Most influential book in your life and why? All-time favorite movie or one of your favorite movies? And if you're driving across the beautiful Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and you're really going to enjoy some music, what artist or genre is that most likely to be?
I think I'll go backwards. Springsteen.
Most people do. Oh, Springsteen. Another Springsteen.
Yeah.
Of course.
I don't know if I'm showing my age of 63. But I have to say, Taylor Swift, a Pennsylvanian, is
okay.
A remarkable artist.
Mm-hmm. Those are very safe picks in a re-election year,
yeah.
Senator. Springsteen and Taylor Swift. Okay, very edgy.
There's some popularity there. I think the movie that had the most impact on me, there are a lot of good ones, obviously, but and I don't see enough movies, but the one that had the most impact on me, I don't know why, for different reasons, was Gladiator.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't watched it repeatedly, but I think I've seen it twice, maybe. Yeah, you know, maybe only twice.
Mm-hmm.
But
Perseverance, betrayal, revenge, all those great humanistic themes.
A very religious movie in some ways about the afterlife, and it's interesting. I just thought it was very moving. But and then the
book.
Oh, the book. The one that was most, I always start with Lincoln, but I think it's a tie between a couple of Lincoln books and the David McCullough book on Truman, which I thought was, that should be required reading.
It should be.
Yeah.
The Truman book by David McCullough, I think, is his best. I've read many David McCullough books, but I don't think there was any subject that
Have you read the Johnstown Flood book?
Yes,
have
I have.
Have you really?
Have.
Wow.
Yes. And the building of the Brooklyn Bridge.
Wow, you're way ahead.
And the Panama Canal.
Uh-huh.
I'm a big McCullough fan, but I don't think there's anyone that he fell in love with more than Harry Truman.
Yeah.
You can find, and it's not that he's not critical, he is, but you just know and you can feel he found something in Truman that was deeply resonant, and the book just is beautiful.
Yep.
It's impossible to not keep reading.
The April the 12th, 1945 segment, where he pieces together through letters that Truman's writing from when he's presiding in the Senate, and learning about Roosevelt's death, and then what he was experiencing, knowing he was going to be sworn in, and that's just fascinating.
That is the voice of probably the second best-known Democrat to grow up in Scranton, Pennsylvania, Bob Casey. Senator, it's been a pleasure. I appreciate the time.
Major, thanks.
Thanks so much. We'll see you next week, folks.
The Takeout is produced by Arden Fari, Jamie Benson, Sarah Cook, Ellie Watson, Jake Rosen, and Ashley Armstrong. CBSN production by Eric Susanen. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Takeout Podcast. That's at Takeout Podcast. And for more, go to takeoutpodcast.com. The Takeout is a production of CBS News.
If you like The Takeout, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and host of the Money Watch podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary and it's not boring. It is a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and maybe more importantly, on your life. I'm going to be your financial coach, someone who brings common sense and an insider's perspective on how to manage your money and your emotions. And I promise we are going to have a little bit of fun along the way. Have a question from retirement to career changes to college funding? Just send us an email at askjill@jillonmoney.com. Follow Money Watch wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app.
It was the biggest scandal in pop music. The stars of Milli Vanilli, the Grammy-winning multi-platinum R&B phenomenon, were exposed as frauds. But none of this was their idea. So whose idea was it? Enter German music producer Frank Farian. He saw the success of acts like Michael Jackson and Prince, and he wanted in, no matter the cost. So he devised the perfect pop heist. Two once-in-a-lifetime talents who were charismatic, full of sex appeal, and phenomenal dancers. The only problem? They couldn't sing. But Frank knew just how to fix that. Wondery's new podcast, Blame It on the Fame, dives into one of pop music's greatest controversies and takes a never-before-heard look at the exploitation of two young Black artists. Milli Vanilli set the world on fire, but when the truth came out, Rob and Fab were the only ones who got burned. Looking back now, it's hard not to wonder, why did everyone blame them and not the man pulling the strings? Follow Blame It on the Fame, Milli Vanilli, on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of Blame It on the Fame early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.